The headlines is suicide bomber targets a police truck in western Pakistan, killing and injuring over 24 people. Protesters clash with police in the southern Chinese city of Guangzhou as public frustration grows with Beijing's stringent COVID measures. And also in our headlines, the NATO chief accuses Russia of trying to use winter as a weapon of war as he calls on member states to pledge more aid for Ukraine. Hello and welcome everybody here in the Iranian capital, Tehran. This is World News. Our top story for this half hour, there's been a deadly bomb explosion in the city of Quetta in southwestern Pakistan 2 days after a militant group declared an end to its summer ceasefire with the government. According to police, the blast hit a patrol team as it was guarding polio vaccinators. Three people are confirmed dead, including a woman and a child, and more than 20 others have been wounded. The Pakistani Taliban, known as Tehrik-e-Taliban Pakistan, has claimed responsibility. The group ended its ceasefire with Islamabad this week, adding that it would soon resume the attacks. The militants have been waging a war against the state, killing thousands of Pakistanis in the past 2 decades. The Pakistani Taliban are separate from the Afghan Taliban. Their aim is to overthrow the government. Our correspondent in Islamabad, Nasser Kazmi, says this was to be expected given that the Pakistani Taliban had earlier announced the resumption of their operations.
We have seen such attacks, especially one of the deadliest attacks happened last month in Lucky Marwat area of Khyber province, where the police van was targeted, in which more than five police cops died in that attack. After that, Pakistani security forces have started carrying out operations against the militant hideouts near Pakistan border. But since that, the Tehrik-e-Taliban Pakistan, who had been engaged with the Pakistani government in recent months and announced a ceasefire, but that ceasefire was ended a few days ago as the group claimed that they will carry out their operations because the Pakistani government is not fulfilling their promises. And now we have witnessed that this massive attack has took place today in this area.
Moving now to China, where public anger continues to grow over the government's stringent COVID restrictions, with protests taking place in several cities in the past few days. There have been reports of protesters clashing with police in the southern city of Guangzhou. Hundreds of people gathered in a district that's been under lockdown since October. In some of the videos circulating online, some people can be seen tearing down barriers and throwing objects at security forces. Other cities, including Beijing and Shanghai, have also witnessed scuffles between protesters and police in recent days. The demonstrations erupted after a fire killed 10 people in an apartment building in Xinjiang region. The protesters are blaming the government's zero COVID policy for the deaths and demanding that it dropped the strict measures. But Beijing accuses those linking the fire to COVID rules of having ulterior motives. China's former president, Jiang Zemin, has died at the age of 96. He passed away due to leukemia and multiple organ failure. Zhang took office in 1989 and presided over a decade. During his term as the Communist Party leader, China emerged as a major manufacturing power and a rising economic rival to the developed world. Among his significant achievements was the return of Hong Kong to China. After more than 100 years of British rule, Chinese flags will be flown at half-mast at government and Communist Party buildings to mark his death. The date of his funeral will be announced later. News review, where we look deeper into some of the top stories of the day. On this segment of the program, NATO is accusing Moscow of using winter as a weapon of war as Ukraine faces a harsh winter due to Russian strikes targeting its energy infrastructure.
Russia is using brutal missile and drone attacks to leave Ukraine cold and dark this winter. President Putin is trying to weaponize winter. to force Ukrainians to freeze or flee.
Stoltenberg also stated that NATO allies have pledged to increase and maintain their comprehensive support for Kiev as long as necessary. Meanwhile, Ukraine has been urging the military alliance to speed up its weapons deliveries, especially advanced air defense systems. Kiev says it needs the weapons to protect its infrastructure from the next Russian strikes. Ukraine's president says the situation remains tense along the front lines. Well, Luhansk and Donetsk are major flashpoints in the Russia-Ukraine war. Heavy fighting has been going on in those regions for months. Over the past weeks, Russia has been carrying out missile attacks on Ukraine's power grid. The strikes have left millions without power, heat, and water as winter temperatures have plummeted to below zero. Moscow admits attacking the infrastructure, but denies deliberately seeking to harm civilians. Well, joining us on this edition of the News Review, we have our correspondent, Jerome Hughes, who's joining us from Brussels. Also, we have political scientist, Heinz Gertner, who's joining us from Vienna. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Jerome in Brussels. Jerome, walk us through the recent comments made by the NATO Secretary General.
Well, Bardi, I mean, we hear all sorts of different statements. It depends on the day that's in it, really, because, you know, time and time again, from the EU side, from the NATO side, we were hearing that Ukraine is winning the war, and now it's switched to the narrative of that Russia is weaponizing the winter. And really, it's very difficult to know exactly what is happening on the ground. But I mean, one expert I spoke to last week said that Russia is using the winter period, or at least the start of it, to regroup, so to speak, and to retrain up to 220, maybe up to 300,000 troops. All the while, you have a situation whereby experts on both sides have been saying for a long time that, look, there's no way that this conflict can really be won to a large extent, and therefore it will have to come down to negotiations. Well, if you have people in NATO and you have people in the EU saying this, why wait is the question. In the meantime, of course, there's untold misery for people in Ukraine, as you mentioned, in terms of the targeting of the infrastructure, but also people are dying, etc. And really, there doesn't seem to be any huge benefit in it. So, you know, but I have to say, I was speaking to one senior official here in the EU. Most of the NATO members are EU members. And there's a great deal of frustration because since the start of March, when you look at the United States and the EU combined, those countries have sent something in the region of at least 32 billion euro worth of weapons to Ukraine. And yet we still have a situation whereby this conflict continues. And you know, on the face of it, when you look at Ukraine at nighttime with those satellite images and it's in complete darkness, it's hard to say that Ukraine is winning the war. And yet all of this money is going into to buying weapons to keep the war going. And at the same time as well, huge amounts of money are being pumped into the Ukrainian government to try and keep the country running as well, with no end in sight.
Mr. Gertner, let's bring you in on the discussion as well. Our correspondent, Jerome Hughes, just put up a very interesting question. If negotiations are the only way forward, then why wait?
Because everybody wants to win at the battlefield, and the battlefield is a situation of twilight, so nobody really knows about the strengths of the other side. So they want to create facts for the negotiations, and everybody seems to want to win some on the operational level or on the strategic level. And Russia seems to have difficulties in the east of Ukraine, and it is bringing the war to another level, to a more strategic level, because Russia has a strategy, escalate to de-escalate. So it now brings it, of course, to the infrastructure, is targeting infrastructure. And because of the winter doesn't know a war break. Both Ukraine and Russia have experiences of winter wars, of course, after the German invasion in Second World War, and the war will continue. And as your correspondent correctly said, there might be some pause for regrouping, but the war doesn't stop. So, of course, as a consequence of this Russian targeting infrastructure, civilian infrastructure, weapons delivery by the West will go on. So even air defense systems, they're discussing also heavy artillery now and heavy tanks. So the war in itself has a self-dynamic, and the great war theorist Karl of Clausewitz said that a war always pushes to extremes. Unless you have a total defeat or you have a negotiation. We don't see a total defeat of one side, so you have to have negotiations, but still both sides think they can have a better positioning on the battlefield before negotiations start.
So staying with you, Mr. Giertner, Ukraine has been urging the military alliance to speed up its weapons deliveries. I'm very interested to get your perspective on the issue of the arms supplies from NATO to Ukraine. Has it assisted Ukraine on the ground? Has it backfired specifically on European members of NATO? And also, do you think that the weapons deliveries, if they continue, there's always the threat that this war, this conflict could spread and spill over into other areas?
Yes, weapons delivery have a tendency of escalation, but right from the beginning, it was the only means for Ukraine to defend itself against the Russian invasion. So Ukraine itself for long had been defeated if there had been no weapons deliveries. So weapons deliveries were more effective than sanctions. Sanctions are not really, really effective in that case. However, they have really a tendency to escalate because Russia will escalate as well. And if we come to the extreme, we are at a point when Russia might think to use nuclear weapons, and that's a very dangerous situation. So all sides have to find a red line where to stop the war. So Russia can reduce its attacks, and then the West might reduce its weapons delivery as a precondition for negotiations. And also, of course, we have to discuss NATO membership of Ukraine. And it's no accident that now the meeting of the NATO foreign ministers takes place in Bucharest, where Bucharest in 2008, the NATO summit decided that NATO might include Georgia and Ukraine as NATO members. And of course, that was already a tendency of escalation. And we saw this in Russian invasion in Georgia the following year. So the NATO expansion and Ukraine's NATO membership has to be on the table, but also the territorial questions. But first of all, there has to be a ceasefire and back to the negotiation table. But there are potential solutions, neutrality for Ukraine, implementing the Minsk agreements, with autonomy. So all sides now have to have some compromises. So absolute aims cannot be achieved in this war anymore.
All right, thanks a lot, gentlemen. That's all the time we have for this segment of the program. Jerome Hughes joining us from Brussels. And thanks to political scientist Heinz Giertner joining us from Vienna. With that, it brings us to an end here on this edition of the News Review. But do stay tuned. There's plenty more to come here. Welcome back. In the U.S., a federal jury has convicted two militia leaders of seditious conspiracy in connection with last year's deadly attack on Capitol Hill. The leaders of the far-right militia known as Oath Keepers have been found guilty of conspiring to stop the peaceful transfer of presidential power. They're facing a jail time of up to 20 years. This is the most high-profile trial so far held over the riots. On January the 6th, 2021, thousands of Donald Trump's supporters violently stormed the Capitol to block Congress from certifying Joe Biden's election victory. Five people were killed during the incident. Since then, about 900 people have been arrested for their role in the riots. Trump himself is under investigation for efforts to overturn the election results and the attack on Congress. The United States is on an annual pace to have their second highest number of mass shootings ever. The debate on gun control continues to be highly polarized, but may point to other causes such as poverty, inequality, and governmental indifference. Rami Mazari has more from Chicago.
In the United States, many spent their Thanksgiving holiday not in gratitude, but in grief, as mass shootings and violent crime continue to plague the nation. Many are lost in confusion, trying to explain why there have been over 600 mass shootings so far this year, a pace just below the all-time record. In only Chicago, the nation's third-largest city, 8 people were killed and at least 30 wounded by gun violence over the holiday weekend.
Everybody's always talking about how dangerous this city is, how unreasonable it is to live in America because of how much crime there is. Crime rates are actually about the same. What changes is how much funding are we getting? How many schools are closing? How many resources do people have? And when you actually don't actually invest in this with a growing population, that's of course going to cause more crime.
The Democratic Party is about to hand over control of the House of Representatives, and they are being widely criticized for refusing to pass stricter gun laws when they had the chance. Republicans are likely to defend gun ownership, and they eked out a midterm legislative victory with a major emphasis on violent crime.
No matter what grievances you bring up, no matter what facts you throw at any congressperson, Democratic or Republican, right? Their idea is to fund the police more. But this is money that should be going to the public. This is like, for example, here in Chicago, in 2020, the mayor asked the public, like, hey, how would you like to sort the budget out? And 80% of the people voted that, hey, we should defund the police and put that money back into other things that could really help out the community.
Crime data in the United States is often late or unreported. But what is certain is that since the coronavirus lockdowns, murders have increased by at least 30%. But what statistics cannot capture is the widespread sentiment that the violence in today's United States is more brutal, shocking, and random than it was in years past. While the U.S. is by far the most armed nation per capita, other countries have high rates of gun ownership, but not the regular violence which makes American life uniquely precarious and fearful. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
see you too.
2 months.
2 months. Yani?
32. Bazaar.
Many people have ideas. However, those who turn their ideas into reality are the ones who search for ways to make their ideas happen. More often than not, this occurs by joining knowledge with method. Knowledge brings competitive advantages and generates sustainable market leadership. Its tools are creativity and innovation, which are all intangible human talents. Never more than now has knowledge been so critical and significant in production and the shift towards a knowledge-based economy.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Bazaar. I'm your host Alireza Ikhtiyarzadeh, and this week we are going to explore the central role science and technology parks play in complementing the knowledge-based production ecosystem. We wanted to see how the government is shifting towards a knowledge-based economy, and plus we wanted to understand why tech parks are so critical to industry development and the national economy. So let's get started. To better understand the country's knowledge-based ecosystem, we visited an event at Semnan Science and Technology Park where we could get some answers. Science and technology parks are where startups and innovative teams can operate in one geographical location. These areas provide diverse services and facilities to companies that fit the criteria. We were able to catch up with a couple companies that operate out of this park. One of these companies specializes in producing advanced machines used in mining. This company is one of only a handful that has managed to indigenize these previously imported products. Another company we ran into while at the event specializes in making hardware and software with artificial intelligence. Events like the one we visited helped braid together and link companies, investors, and infrastructures with the necessary resources to complete projects. These components all make up the various parts of the knowledge-based ecosystem. But we also wanted to know how science and tech parks operate and why they are attractive to businesses. One of the advantages of these parks is that it's a space where crucial resources are offered. These places are a focal point for serving knowledge-based companies producing advanced specialized products needed in the domestic market. Science and technology parks also serve as a launching pad toward the international arena. We spoke with a park official who helped shed more light on this issue.
There are four scenarios of which foreign companies could have the opportunity to reside in Semnan Science and Technology Park. Well, the first scenario will be the execution of soft lending programs between the two countries, which gives the foreign companies an opportunity to get familiar with the host country's market. Well, the second scenario will be holding joint events, including joint startup events, fairs and similar events which could help them get familiar with each other. And the other scenario, or the third way that a company could have the chance to come to our park, will be to find and carry out joint projects with our companies, and finally sharing the interests The fourth scenario will be holding joint innovation tours, which gives the companies an opportunity to get familiar with how innovation ideas are being implemented in other countries.
These parks are essential in filling a gap in the tech innovation ecosystem, providing monetary resources and attracting investments. These establishments also join investors with particular companies and projects. They offer numerous unique services such as facilitating visa processes, offering financial assistance such as soft loans or even special incentives under free trade zones like tax exemptions. And it doesn't stop there. This park offers so much more to investors.
The other solution or the other way that could attract foreign investors will be to define BOT models, which means they have to introduce projects and within the framework of our protocols. And once it has been approved, they can operate the project for a while. This includes mainly long-term projects. Particularly, I shall have to tell you that Semnon Science and Technology Park is very interested in projects in the fields of artificial intelligence, IT, ICT, IoT, and virtual reality. And we could help these companies. And once they have, once they build it and then operate it, they could transfer it to our park.
Most tech parks, such as this one, are active in the international sphere and collaborate with other domestic tech parks. Furthermore, these areas function as export hubs. Therefore, one of their main activities is boosting and supplying domestic products to this end. Over the years, the government has placed special attention on knowledge-based companies while implementing new approaches to support tech parks and their businesses. Some of these initiatives aim to remove obstacles along the path of development of these companies. Other activities involve giving resources to executive branches to further develop the ecosystem of innovation and technology nationwide. Along these lines, the Vice Presidency for Science and Technology has implemented a series of activities. This includes investing some $1.4 billion towards financial services. The government has also created a strategic technology development headquarters. It is tasked with implementing 400,000 tech projects and 150 commercialization projects. But that's not all. The government has also established 65 innovation centers and dozens more accelerators to support the developing entrepreneurship ecosystem. Currently, there are well over 7,000 knowledge-based companies scattered across the nation. These enterprises offer services and products in numerous industries. Many are active in biotech, computer software, agriculture, food, chemical tech, aircraft maintenance, steel, gas, petrochemicals, and pharmaceuticals, just to name a few. According to government figures, the knowledge-based ecosystem accounts for more than 3% of the country's gross domestic product. Moreover, the share of knowledge firms in the country's GDP in 2019 exceeded $34 billion and witnessed a 450% growth since then. That's all according to the Vice President for Science and Technology, Soreno Satori. Now it's time for me to take a little break here and hand it over to my good friend out in the field who's prepared a report for us.
In ancient Iran, felt was already used in the production of numerous kinds of clothing, bed clothes, floor carpets, and different kinds of sacks. In fact, the Iranian world may have been an important center for the development of felt technology. In the modern world today, felt or namat has found its way to industries of all kinds in various forms.
You just can't imagine how crowded this place is. Whenever I want to talk on the phone, I have to find a sign-up place to be able to talk to you. It's really crazy. God, in today's chaotic society, stress is an issue that many of us suffer from every day. But what matters most is trying to find distress sources and try to find effective solutions. For this reason, today I'm here to tell you that I finally found a startup, a new innovative company that has finally found a solution to this disastrous problem. I won't tell you any further. Let's just go and check it out. Felt, or so-called Namat, is the acoustic solution for rowdy places to absorb and decrease undesirable noises. The aim is to provide sound serenity and to improve physical, mental, and psychological health. Namat Studio's scope of work is based on designing and manufacturing products. Recently, it has also played a significant role in different projects like some innovation centers in Asia and Africa. This company has focused on designing and building acoustic products. Generally in Iran, there is no specific competitor in this field. However, there are some groups in America and Northern Europe that are engaged with Felt.
If I want to tell you about a history about how our company established, it goes back to 3 years ago when Diva was chosen to renovate the innovation factory of Iran, that was the biggest one in the time. And the designer tried to make the offices and they tried to design a place that the people be comfortable, have a good place to work. That's why we understand that we have some advantages and disadvantages. One of the disadvantages is about the sound pollution that we had in the this area, that places were noisy and the employees didn't like that. That's why we try to use special materials for control this sound pollution. And we reached the felt material and we try to use this material.
Designing acoustic and movable working stations with the aim of recycling old products and reuse them in different functions. What is worth noticing about this business is the fact that the problem-solution method is based upon three WH questions: why, how, and what. Why is to define the problem. How is the process towards the solution. And what is the final product and prototype. These acoustic solutions were combined with architecture in various parts of the space and played the role in sound insulation and creating a silent space. All right, now I want to walk you through some of the major products that are made of felt. The first piece we have here is an artwork that is made of wool felt that acts as a sound-absorbing material, not only as an aesthetic material that you can put it in your home place, but also as a sound-absorbing material. There is this phone booth. If I get inside, I can feel the private space and how the atmosphere really changes. It improves the acoustic vibes and reduces the reverberation when I get inside. And there's this whole thing, we call it desk divider. It's actually one of the main products in this company. People and employees put it in on their desk to divide their own workplace with the person right next to them.
We have three different kind of material that we use on our works that absorb undesirable sounds, which are wool panels, or the other name is felt, and in Persian we say namat, and thermofelt and carpet. And the felt are in two kind of industrial felt and the natural felt. Natural felt is made by wools, and industrial material is made by a process by the battles and pet materials. They have different color patterns and thicknesses. The thicknesses are from 3 millimeter to 50 millimeter. And about the thermofelt, we have this material that we can use for more absorption. It has three kind of material with polyester, jeans, and heavy traffic, and it's very good for absorbing. And the last one is the carpet that is heavy traffic that we use in heavy traffic places such as the offices, and it can be cleaned very easy by the vacuum cleaner.
As I mentioned earlier, this idea was created based on the concept of recreating, recycling, and revitalizing the surrounding substances and generalizing this idea to the upcoming products with different potentials. Such small-scale products are intended to improve the mental and physical health of users. And finally, creating a comfortable, inviting atmosphere.
Just like this linear lighting, almost everything here is made of felt. Based on environmental psychology, this linear lighting has been created in a way to provide maximum visual and acoustic comfort in the workplace, especially a co-working space like this. This company, Namad Startup, has been trying to promote sustainability and also take steps towards industrialization. Among all the products here, there were so many things, but I decided to choose felt laptop case to carry my laptop with me wherever I go. So it's not about the ideas, it's about making the ideas happen. I've been Sarah Dema.
There is so much more that can be said about the country's knowledge-based production and activities, so before we go, let's look at a couple of developments in this area. Most of us are familiar with vitamin supplements. However, some vitamins need to be injected, which can be a hassle. Now, a knowledge-based company has produced an oral form of one of these vitamins, saving many of us from the pain of sticking needles. This pharmaceutical company has produced the first oral form of a vitamin B complex that was typically only found in an injectable form. This company also operates out of Pardis Science and Technology Park. It is also one of the first and largest knowledge-based companies. It might be interesting to know that this company mainly produces raw materials such as probiotic products needed in the pharma industry. Such productions have saved the country millions on imports so far. Knowledge-based productions are driven by scientific discoveries, and Iranian scientists produce roughly 2% of the world's scientific articles. That's according to the Minister of Science, Research and Technology. Mohammad Ali Zulfigol says Iran, on average, registers around 70,000 scientific articles in international journals each year. He says Iran is now globally ranked 15th. For the number of scientific papers it produces. Zulfigol noted the quality ranking of Iranian articles in the top 10 fields like technology and engineering. The minister highlighted that the nation ranks 5th in nanotechnology publications as well. The official further added that those publishing academic articles also work in knowledge-based companies, helping produce quality products in the competitive field. And with that, we come to the end of this segment. You can contact us with your thoughts and comments via email. And don't forget, you can also send us topics you're interested in. Thank you for tuning in and join us next week, same time, for another edition of Bazaar. It's bye for now. Until then.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, brothers and sisters, dear listeners, welcome to Mafatihul Hayat, Keys of Life. I am your host, Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi. One of the keys of life is seeking medication and knowing diseases. There are ways where we can cure ourselves or at least prevent disease in the first place. The Ahlul Bayt alayhum as-salam, they have not left any stone unturned in this regard. There are simple measures and simple things that me and you can do in order to prevent diseases. And most of these things are available in our disposal. For example, we have a hadith from Al-Imam Musa Al-Kadhim alayhi as-salam. He says, إِنَّ الْإِجَاسَ الطَّرِي يُطْفِئُ الْحَرَارَةِ. He says, the fresh and juicy pears, they in fact turn the heat of the body down. Which means, if a person has a fever and his temperature is high, we should give him what? pears is a fruit, delicious, nice, and it cures a person from fever, or at least it helps reduces the heat of the body. Imam Rida alayhi salam, our eighth imam, he says, من أراد ردع الزكام مدة أيام الشتاء فليأكل كل يوم ثلاث لقم من الشهد. Whoever wants to avoid cold and fever during the season of winter, then let him eat 3 spoons of shahad. And a shahad, it's a type of honey. 3 spoons a day, tiny spoons, should help you and should keep cold and fever away from you for the entire season of winter. Easy to do, and they are available. Honey is available, and so is pears also available. We can do that. Also, Amir al-Mu'mineen, Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam, he gives a remedy to a person who feels a bit of weakness in his body. And he says, if you want to regain and gain strength, this is what you do. He said, إذا ضعف المسلم, when the Muslim becomes weak, فليأكل اللحم باللبن, let him eat meat cooked in milk. For Allah has put the strength in these two things, meat and milk. And obviously the Ahl Bayt alayhi salam, they're talking about fresh milk, not milk that made by machines with added preservatives and with added chemicals, just fresh cow milk. So if that is cooked with meat, which is actually a practice they used to do back in the day, they say it gives you a lot of strength. And even now, a lot of doctors, they suggest this food if a person is feeling weakness due to certain diseases. Someone needs to keep that in mind. Also, the Ahl Bayt alayhim salam, they say al-hinna, the plant, henna as we call it, yuthibu bis-sahak wa yuzidu fi ma' al-wajh. It removes bad smell, and also it gives the face a bit of radiance. Wa yutayyibu an-naka, and makes your taste much better. Wa yuhassinu al-walad, and makes, if a person has a child, it makes the child a better, good-looking child. So just the plant of henna itself, if it's consumed, it also gives all these benefits. Let us take a short break, and then we come back right after.
Ayatollah Javadi Amali, the author of the book Mafatih al-Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in 2 volumes. One volume, the present volume, Mafatihul Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc. But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree.
امام اونطوری که این رو گفته بودم گفته دی اون امامی که گفته اگر روزه بگیری ثواب داره همون امام گفته که اگر درخت بکاری اون ثواب داره.
Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam who has stressed out the reward for praying has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree.
محیط زیست نگه سالم نگه داره این دقل ثواب داره.
There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment.
وقتی میخوای کشاورزی کنی یه قدر گندم بگیر رو به قبله بیست این دعا رو بخون اینم هم امام گفته دیگه.
When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned.
تو نظام اسلامی این جلد دوم جاش خالی.
We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Mafatih al-Hayat, Keys of Life. One concept when it comes to seeking medication, and it is an extremely important concept that we need to keep in mind, and that is not to consume any medication that is considered to be haram. We have many hadith from the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam that they tell us we should not consume medicine if it's haram, even if it is, you know, our sickness depends on it. For example, the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wasallam says, "Inna Allah ta'ala anzala da'a wa dawa." Allah has brought down sickness, disease, and the cure with it. وَجَعَلَ لِكُلِّ دَاءٍ دَوَاءٍ And he made for every disease a sickness. فَتَدَاوَوْا Therefore, seek that particular medication for that particular disease. وَلَا تَدَاوَوْا بِالْحَرَامِ Do not treat yourselves with that which is haram. Meaning that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, whatever disease you have, He has revealed and sent down a medication for it that is halal, because Allah would not ask me and you to take and consume medication that is haram. So you might say, well, there's only haram available. We say don't take it because it's not meant to be for it. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam says, "Laysa fi haramin shifa." In anything that is haram, you will not find cure in. And also when a person asks the Imam Sadiq alayhi salam if he can drink alcohol as a means of medication, the Imam says, "An-nabidu," where they put the nabid, or as we say, wine, into the food or drink, he says, "La laysa yanbaghi li ahadin an yastashri bil haram." No one should use alcohol, or at least beer or what have you, or wine, as a form of medication. Then Imam Sadiq alayhi salam again also says to one of his companions, when he asked them if they can add a mixture of wine to a particular medicine and they make it into a sort of medicine, the Imam says to him, "La wallah, ma ahabbu an anzur ilayh." Such medicine I would not look at. I do not want to look at it. فَكَيْفَ أَتَدَوَى بِهِ Then how do you expect me to consume it? If I don't want to see it, how do you expect me to consume it? Then the Imam says, "Innahu bimanzilati shahm al-khanzir." It is like, you know, the skin or the fat of the pig, aw lahm al-khanzir, or the meat of the pig. Wa inna unasan la yatadawuna bih. And there are people, actually, he says, who use this sort of medication. However, we as Muslims, and especially as Shia, we do not use any form of medication that is haram. Now here, we have many chemical medication that some of them actually contain haram elements or ingredients. We have to be very wary of that, especially with capsules. Most of the capsules are made from pig skin and pig products. So we have to make sure that these capsules that we are taking actually do not contain pig parts. And some of the drinks that the liquids that we drink, some of them, they actually have a portion of alcohol. So we have to make sure that it does not contain anything. So the Ahlul Bayt are very clear when it comes to anything that is haram. You think of it, wherever haram there is. If it someone comes to you and tells you, well, you can use that as a medication, it helps, it worked before, you say to them, "No thanks, I am not interested." If it's haram, you can't use it as a mean to get Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to cure you. The cure is from Allah, not from the medication. So if it's haram, guaranteed it's not going to work. Thank you for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Driving past, walking fast, to the field of dreams. Hear the children scream.
There was The Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time.
What you heard was an IRIB English Radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.